The 0-2 again. And a fly ball towards the right field corner. This is tricky, and it's gone! It is a three-run homer for Bo Bichette down the right field line, and the Blue Jays have taken the lead.
Hey, what's going on? It's At the Letters for Wednesday, August 10th, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Arden's Welling in Toronto, Ben Nicholson Smith in Baltimore, Maryland. Our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade, and old Baltimore Benny over there at Camden Yards last night, sitting through a rain delay, working hard, doing 15 radio hits and 30 TV drop-ins, pumping out dozens of articles, and watching what had to be just the most scripted, torturous Blue Jays fan fiction that you could possibly come up with, right? For the Blue Jays to blow a game late at the hands of Rougned Odor, who in between like some of the most shocking defense that you were ever going to see played at the major league level, takes Jimmy Garcia deep on a really bad changeup to win a game for the surging Baltimore Orioles. Ben, could you believe it as it was occurring?
It was really remarkable. I mean, Rougned Odor, the ultimate Blue Jays villain, of course, and the Orioles. I went into this series thinking, you know what? This team is about to be, you know, really reminded by the Blue Jays where they belong in the American League East standings, and it's kind of gone the other way. So really remarkable. It's been an interesting series. It's great to be back at Camden Yards. It's my first time here in a few years. First time the Jays are here in 2022. And so, yeah, it's really nice to be here. Baltimore is incredibly hot and humid. It is like 96 degrees Fahrenheit, 36 Celsius before you get the humidity. So I'm sitting here in my hotel room, very comfortable right now. But those on-field hits get, it's really hot, really hot.
What is the atmosphere like at Camden Yards right now at a Baltimore Orioles home game? Because we are talking about, no joke, one of the hottest teams in baseball over the last 4-6 weeks. Certainly the hottest team in the American League East. The Orioles are 6 games over 500 right now. They've got young stars who are debuting. They've got some old vets hanging around. They've got this electric bullpen. They're doing closer entrances. I mean, is the atmosphere at Camden Yards different now that the Orioles are good, or is it the same as it ever was?
Oh, it's honestly really good. I would say it's really good. They had 11,000 people yesterday, but they were all super stoked about the team. They were really excited. The Felix Bautista entrance is really good. I thought they did that really well. And he's a really good pitcher as well. Too bad they traded their other one in Jorge Lopez. But yeah, it's a great atmosphere. I think that there's an awareness on the part of the fans that this team is on the rise. There's an excitement level there. They're definitely playing with house money right now. But when you have stars like Adley Rutschman at the center of it, you can see where they're going here. And I still don't believe, these last two games aside, I still don't believe the Orioles are a playoff team in 2022. But they're sure making life difficult for the teams around them right now. And front and center in that is the Jays.
So they're not a playoff team. They can't be a playoff team. I can't sit here and say that a team that's rotation is like Jordan Lyles and Austin Voth and, I mean, Kyle Bradish. I just can't sit here and say this is going to be a playoff team. But are they a problem, Ben? Are they a legit problem for the Toronto Blue Jays the rest of the way and going forward?
You know, they could be. They have the potential to be, which is way more than we could have said before. And it's more, they've impressed me this last couple of days here. Honestly, I still think you'd rather play the Orioles than the Guardians or the Rays, and the Blue Jays should beat the Guardians when they play them this weekend. They're better than the Rays on paper. So I think when you zoom out big picture, the Orioles are not that much of a problem in the sense that they're a 78 win team or 74 win team. They're not horrible. They're a competitive team, which is a huge step forward for them, considering they lost 110 last year. But I don't know, where do you land on this? Do you think they're a problem? They're okay. They're on the slightly below 500 side of okay.
They're a problem in 23 and beyond. This season, they should not be a problem. Like this constitution of the Baltimore Orioles is a team that the Blue Jays should beat reliably. And I know that they just lost to them twice on the eve of recording this podcast, but it's not like they were getting blown out. They should have won the game on Tuesday, honestly. I mean, there was like so much weirdness in that game. You get the rain delay, you get Zach Pop, who warms up to enter a game and then gets burned without throwing a pitch. I mean, you get Jimmy Garcia, who's like having a fine year, not giving up a lot of bombs, like just a terrible spot for a changeup to Rougui Odor. Like just I can't believe that he threw it there. Obviously he wasn't trying to, right? But that's the last place you want to put a changeup to Rougui Odor. And I think that was just probably one of the most poorly executed pitches by Jimmy Garcia this year. And typically a guy who executes his pitches, you know, reliably well. So like, I just think there was a lot of funkiness in that game. And I think that the Blue Jays are going to win more often than they lose in their remaining, 13 against the Orioles, as they should. But I do think that in 23 and beyond, the Orioles are going to be a problem because you're starting to see some of the young talent emerge, right? Like you're starting to see them, you know, like not just having tank pieces like Odor around the diamond, but like also having young homegrown, like above average players coming up from their system. You're seeing them do some interesting stuff on the pitching side, like the way that they built this bullpen, that wasn't a fluke. Like those guys were all targeted for very specific reasons, and they were able to bring them in and make some tweaks and make some adjustments with them to make them better and to make them as good as they are. Like it's not just as easy as saying, oh, this guy throws 99, bring him in, right? Like you have to actually get him to a place where he's locating it and he's using secondary stuff off of it and he feels confident on the mound and he's able to pitch well in certain spots. It's also deployment with those relievers and what situations you put them into. So you're doing some smart things. And then you look at the farm system and it's one of the top rated across MLB, and your mileage may vary on how much those rankings are worth, but that means you got a lot of talent. What can you do when you got a lot of talent in your farm system? You can either supplement from within and have those young players impact your big league roster, or you can trade those young players for win now talent and proven veteran MLBers. Like my only question with the Orioles is whether they're going to spend on the free agent market, just with some of the uncertainty around their ownership and some of the weirdness that is going on there. Like play back the tape, man. Last offseason, I was like, the Orioles should sign Carlos Correa. Last offseason, I thought they should have signed him to a long-term deal. Like, go get him now. So what if you're going to be bad this year? You're bad in the first year of his contract, and then you still have the good player after that when you're trying to be good. I think they should go out, and if Correa is on the market again, they should go sign him again. Or they should go sign Trey Turner, like another really good young, like, well, nobody's young in free agency, but like really good free agent this offseason, to supplement this thing and to start getting good going forward. Cause I do think that in 23 and beyond, like they could be legit in this division.
Yeah. Xander Bogaerts, potentially there are a lot of good free agent shortstops, Dansby Swanson, maybe just get one of those guys, see what happens. Cause they could certainly use it, get stronger up the middle along with Mullins and of course Rutschman, and see what happens. It's yeah. The bullpen's remarkable. I think, you know, I should ask around about this a bit more, but I have this theory that it's easier to build a bullpen on a bad team because you can take a Rule 5 guy. You have the top waiver pick. You can take chances on guys who are maybe high risk, high reward. You're not going to spend $3 million on a David Phelps because it's like, what does David Phelps do for the Orioles? You take bigger risks, and then the Orioles are really having some of them pay off. So I kind of have that theory that's a little easier to do it, but whatever. I mean, at this point, they've kind of done it. Their bullpen is pretty good. Guys like Baker throwing 99. I mean, Bo Bichette took it the opposite field for a home run, which is a pretty nice piece of hitting by Bo, and we can get to that. But, you know, the bullpen's really good for the Orioles. I guess it's just that starting rotation needs some help. So this offseason, they should be signing a starting pitcher, a couple starting pitchers, and probably a shortstop. Probably go out and get like one of those big shortstops. And that would be, if they can do that, then it would be really interesting. And the AL East would have five good teams.
You could say they have five good teams right now, honestly, like this year currently. I mean, the Orioles are 6 games over .500 at some point. We got to give them some credit. And like Baker, an interesting guy. Like this is why I think the Orioles are actually doing something legit with their pitching development or with what they're telling these guys. Because Baker is a guy who was like a career minor leaguer, had opportunities in other organizations. Blue Jays targeted him. Blue Jays liked something about him clearly because he was like with the Toronto organization for multiple seasons and then left on waivers this past offseason, ends up in Baltimore. Baltimore and figures it out, right? You even look at Jorge Lopez is a guy who like was one of the more coveted relievers at this year's trade deadline. I mean, what was Jorge Lopez in 2021? What was Jorge Lopez in any year since he became a professional? Not a coveted arm, a guy who was like a starter, maybe a swingman some years, like clubs couldn't figure him out. And then he gets to Baltimore and they were able to get him to make some adjustments and become the guy that he is. I just think that like the Mike Elias crew there, they brought some of that Houston mojo with them. And I think they're doing some smart things with pitchers.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty interesting to watch for the Jays here. Kind of frustrating, but this is the reality in the American League East. And it's not going to get easier in the course of the next couple months. So pressure's on for this team and the Jays. You know, I don't know what you made of the Jackie Bradley Jr. reinforcement, Arden, but I think it's an interesting kind of point to get to as we look at what the Jays are doing. Because when I initially saw that he might be joining the Blue Jays, I wasn't necessarily sure what to make of it because they kind of already have one defensive specialist. But at least for now, I can kind of see the case for it.
When I saw that move, I thought, oh no, who's hurt? Right. And obviously the answer is George Springer's hurt. But like my understanding, and maybe you can tell me if things have changed, but my understanding was it was going to be just a 10-day thing for Springer on the IL, maybe 12 days, like at the max. But it wasn't, you know, it's they're basically just kind of letting that thing calm down and letting the anti-inflammatory shot that he got, which is not just cortisone, some other anti-inflammatories in there, just letting that take effect and basically giving him that Band-Aid to like get to the finish line before he can do something more meaningful to address this injury in the offseason. So when I saw Jackie Bradley Jr., I thought, and then I saw Teoscar Hernandez out of the lineup, and I thought, oh, like what's happening? Because you already have Bradley Zimmer, right? So what do you think is sort of the rationale between this all outfielders bench that the Blue Jays are starting to run here?
Yeah, it almost literally is all outfielders because Biggio would play a little outfield for you if you need, you know, of course, Whit Merrifield's in that mix. Yeah, it's interesting. I think so my read on the Springer thing is he was doing some fielding drills on in the outfield grass at Camden Yards the other day, the newly expanded outfield grass, by the way. It is a massive left field now, but that's another story. So he was out there doing some drills. At the same time, my understanding is he hasn't really resumed swinging or throwing. So I don't know. I think it'll be longer than 10 days. Is it a couple weeks? Hard to say. But either way, they have this window to get a look at both Bradley Jr. and Bradley Zimmer, and they're somewhat redundant. I could see maybe a start or two mixed in for Bradley Jr. to get him in the mix, get him some looks, but they are very similar. At the same time, having that redundancy now isn't a bad thing because it's not like you lose Otto Lopez in the process. They option him to the minor leagues. He's still in the organization, so this affords you the chance to get a look at what these guys can do. It's a little outfield heavy for now. And then when Springer returns, whenever that is, you'll have more information on Bradley Jr. and on Bradley Zimmer. And at that point, you can say, you know what? You're a veteran player. We like what you brought. We like the leadership and all of this, all of these intangibles. But maybe it's a Sergio Romo situation where he just wasn't producing enough. In which case, all right, thanks for your time. Good luck. See you down the road. And he's gone. Or they can say, we're actually impressed. If Jackie Bradley Jr. can kind of come through, great. He's able to contribute. He's the one who's on the roster. Now you fake IL Bradley Zimmer for a couple weeks, stash him until September, and then maybe rosters expand and he's available then, or someone gets hurt and he's back on the team then. So that's kind of how I see things playing out.
How do you fake IL a guy who doesn't play?
Well,
how do you get hurt?
Chris Sale broke his wrist riding a bike. Who's to say that there can't be an unexpected injury for anyone?
They're going to be like chucking banana peels around him outside the hotel, just trying to get him to slip. I mean, okay, sure. If this is just another like 10-day NBA contract thing, right, that the Blue Jays are doing, like, sure, whatever. Like, what's the downside? There is literally none. No downside to taking a look at Jackie Bradley Jr. I mean, I would be personally out trying to get like a Jake McGee in here myself if I was like splashing around that kind of money and just like taking flyers on guys. I'd probably be doing it more so in the bullpen than in the outfield right now. Like I do wonder what this says about the Blue Jays' confidence in George Springer playing center field ever again this season. I wonder if like that's why they are now having this sort of center field audition on their bench, because I'm just not confident in what they would think Jackie Bradley Jr. can do differently than what Bradley Zimmer is right now, other than put the ball in play more often. Like, I think he'll strike out less, but I don't know what other attribute Jackie Bradley Jr. would have an edge on Bradley Zimmer in. And I also don't know where the opportunity is going to come from for him to prove himself in that situation that you said, where he's, you know, the Blue Jays are like, oh, we're impressed. He, you know, he did so well. I mean, how much is he even realistically going to play?
That's a good point. And, you know, the people that I've spoken to who've watched a lot of Jackie Bradley Jr. this year say he's really not hitting, you know, and that's borne out in the numbers. You can see that pretty obviously. There's not a lot there offensively right now. So,
I could have told you that, Ben.
Yeah, exactly. There's not a lot that you're going to get offensively. So he's a bench outfielder at this point. I guess one potential usage is, you know, we saw it on Tuesday where the Blue Jays in that one center field slot used Whit Merrifield. Then they pinch hit. Or no, then it was a defensive replacement, Bradley Zimmer. Then pinch hit Teoscar. Then bring in Jackie Bradley Jr. So one spot in the lineup has four different players because they have all these outfielders. So you can go defense, offense, defense. You don't really see that in Major League Baseball very often. The right field defensive specialist, not really a position that exists. But hey, the other thing is, you know, if you wanted to, you could go center field Bradley Zimmer late in games and right field Jackie Bradley Jr. I actually kind of like that. I mean, if you had infinite roster spots, you would certainly want to do that. Now, the reality is the Jays don't. And so they have to show some discretion in the way that they're using those spots. But they're getting by with just the two catchers right now. Otto Lopez wasn't necessarily giving them a ton anyway. So I see it. I like the 10-day NBA contract comp. I kind of see it that way. It's a tryout. You know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and we are like spending way too much oxygen on it as well when it's just the 13th position player on the roster, right? Like, we're talking like what, you know, whether they say they do end up in a spot where they're choosing between Zimmer or Bradley Jr. I mean, it's so marginal the difference that would make over the bulk of the season. In Bradley Zimmer, we're talking about a guy who has 86 plate appearances this year. Like, has anybody ever been on the big league roster the entire season, not missed a day, the entire season, and had so few plate appearances? Somebody needs to look that up, because it is like remarkable how little he plays. The guy has like 5 plate appearances in the last month. I don't know how he's ever even expected to perform when he is at the plate, because it's just so inconsistent. The opportunity that he gets, he faces actual live big league pitching so seldom. So I would expect it'll be the same thing for Jackie Bradley Jr. So it really doesn't like matter who's hitting better, who puts the ball in play more, who strikes out more, because neither guy's ever going to be at the plate. I think that roster spot, that 13th man, is just like straight defense and speed. In those two categories, I would probably lean Zimmer at this point. So that's why I would probably side with Zimmer if it did come down to those two. But like I said, there's really no harm in carrying Bradley Jr. right now, just kind of seeing what happens. But I really do think that, you know, that whatever happens between these two, whatever impact these players make for the rest of the year and into the playoffs, it's going to be pretty inconsequential.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I agree with you, first of all, that Bradley Zimmer, to me, if you had to only have one, because he plays such a good center field defense, I think that's the guy to me at this point, offense aside. So I agree there. And also, I mean, if he was named Justin Anderson and not Jackie Bradley Jr., and he had never won a gold glove or won 2 World Series or hit 26 home runs in the major leagues, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation. And also, I mean, we're in a stretch of the season where, you know, they still have so much baseball left, and yet there's not really a chance to make acquisitions. So when they do make one, it's kind of more interesting. Our interest is peaked, of course, because there's no August trade deadline. The chance that you have is figuring out a small signing like this.
Do you like my Jake McGee flyer idea with Tim Mesa on the IL with a dislocated right shoulder? You don't have a lefty in the bullpen right now. You can't recall Matt Gage until like the 15 days on his option are up, and he's got like 9 more days on that or something like that. It's a pretty substantial amount of time. So there's no way to get a lefty into this bullpen without an injury. Like, if somebody goes on the IL, you could recall Gage, but without somebody going on the IL, you can't get lefty into this bullpen other than like Foster Griffin without like going for a Jake McGee. So if you're just like handing out NBA 10-day contracts and giving auditions, take a look at Jake McGee. Why not, Ben?
So I don't have the numbers in front of me right this second, but if I'm not mistaken, his strikeout rate is like 11-12% this year. And to me, that's just low. You know, when the reliever major league average is 23%, you're literally half of that. I'm just not, honestly, I'm not that interested. And I know you could say, okay, there's the Pete Walker factor and see what happens. But Pete Walker, he's got his hands full as it is. You know, he's trying to navigate all the existing arms. Yusei Kikuchi is making a turn in that road. They need Yusei Kikuchi in that rotation. So Pete Walker's already busy enough before he tries to start figuring out what ails Jake McGee.
Yeah, Jake McGee's strikeout rate 12.4% this year, 24.3% in 2021, 42% in 2020 with the World Series champion LA Dodgers. I like sat down with Jake McGee's Savant page the other day for about 20 minutes and was like, why is this guy's fastball not playing anymore? And tried to figure it out. And I came up empty, man. I just drew blanks on it because it's similar velocity, similar action and movement. He's using it similarly. It's, I was texting somebody the other day and it was like, is he tipping pitches? And it's like, I don't know. He throws his fastball 90% of the time. I don't think that you can tip if you only throw one pitch. So why isn't this fastball working? And I couldn't figure it out. And I'm sure the Blue Jays have some theories on it. Good teams keep giving him opportunities and good teams also keep cutting bait. So that kind of cuts both ways. But I just think like a real pressing need for the Blue Jays right now is a left-hander in their bullpen. I would love for it to be Matt Gage because I think Matt Gage has earned some run. I think that he deserves it for the way that he has pitched, not only in AAA, but in MLB. Good results in both AAA and MLB. The other day when I looked it up, it was like a 1-3 ERA in each. Identical ERAs in both. He has been effective. His stuff has played. He's a good teammate. I know there are people in the clubhouse who thought that he got kind of jerked around earlier this year. Like he got caught in a roster crunch, sure, but it was kind of, you know, there's a point this year where it was the Blue Jays were kind of given similar audition type deals to guys off the waiver wire. And I think people were kind of thinking, what's wrong with the guy you have internally who's earned it and who came up and pitched well for us out of our big league bullpen and got out and was like actually earning leverage opportunities. Why aren't we going to him? Why is there another flavor of the week coming in off waivers right now? I think Matt Gage deserves that run. The thing is, like, just roster rules rise. You can't do it right now. So if I need somebody for the next 10 days, maybe I take a look at Jake McGee and see if I can help him get some swing and miss back with that fastball and miss bats and use it a bit more effectively, because I don't really see anything in the profile of the fastball that suggests it's changed all that much. So I wonder if there is a little adjustment, a little tweak, something someone can pick up to allow him to recapture what made him the Giants closer last year and what made him like a really effective reliever with the Dodgers in 2020.
Yeah, to me, I think if this was the second week of spring training, then do it. Like, get him in there, see what you can do. And now if he's willing to go to AAA Buffalo and work with the Jays pitching people there, then I say great, get him in the organization, see what happens. I don't know that I would allocate the major league roster spot to him at this point. I think you're almost, you know, and I know I just said there's so much season left, but we're almost getting to a point where it's like, I don't know how much experimentation you want to necessarily be doing and how much you want to be seeking those answers. And this is why, like, you know, I know Mesa got hurt shortly after the trade deadline. This is why we were saying last week, like, maybe just go and get like one more arm. Instead of getting, you know, Bass and Pop, maybe just get one more and see what happens there. Obviously didn't happen, so the Jays have to figure it out now, and they should be well equipped to do so still and preserve that top wildcard spot. But yeah, the McGee one's interesting, and I think we'll continue kind of looking at these guys as they pop up, as they're released, because the potential for improvements always intrigues front office people, and I think fans too have a real interest in, hey, what about this next acquisition?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not talking about experimenting in the bullpen. I'm talking about like trying to upgrade the bullpen. I don't know how else you're going to meaningfully upgrade on kind of that, those last guys in your bullpen, kind of like your Trent Thorntons, your Trevor Richardses of this world, with, if not on waivers, right? Like, it would have to be internally. It would have to be Julian Merriweather, who's on a rehab assignment. Nate Pearson's throwing from distance off flat ground. Like, those guys are coming eventually. But if you want to see if you can upgrade over the next several weeks, it kind of has to be off waivers. It's not like Felix Bautista is going to be dropped on waivers anytime soon. So it has to be kind of the Jake McGee's of this world.
Yeah. And look, I mean, the last spot in that bullpen, there are ways to kind of to see what you have there. Trent Thornton has options. I'm actually not sure how many times he's been optioned, because you might be running up against that five limit this year. He's certainly been optioned a few times. But, you know, either way, you can find ways to create a spot, start them in low leverage and see what happens. So, you know, it's certainly low downside. And, you know, we'll see if the Jays end up taking that flyer.
I mean, if you're handing out neck strains over there, Ben, I mean, I think there's probably a couple of people who could, you know, come up with neck strains. I mean, you mentioned the deadline. Maybe we can end on this, because last time we recorded, it was like right after the deadline. And like, I hadn't had a chance to do much kind of digging or talking to people after it. And I don't know how much you've done, but like, it is kind of interesting just getting some of the reactions to the outcome at the deadline for the Blue Jays and like how things went. I think the greatest frustration is just with how few controllable relievers moved at the deadline, like just how little activity there was in that market. And like, someone was like, yeah, go look at it, like none of these guys moved. And you go back and you look at it, and it's like, yeah, think about the guys we were talking about coming in, right? Thinking about like the Tigers guys, the Jimenez and the Soto, thinking about like Joe Mantiply from Arizona didn't move. Think about the Royals guys, right? Barlow, Stomont, Kyle Finnegan with the Nationals. Like, a lot of those guys, a lot of that like one more reliever that we're talking about did not move. And like this, you know, the Blue Jays not getting that one more high leverage reliever was not for a lack of trying. Like, coming into the deadline, the Blue Jays prepped out like a list of 80 relievers, all these guys, and they did their homework on all of them, and they did their, you know, analytical profiles, like what their pitch usage and their characteristics, and they did their background on the teammate and all that stuff. And then they started reaching out, started having discussions about a whole bunch of guys on that list, which they sorted out preferentially. And it was like only a handful of relievers even moved. And the Blue Jays got at least two of them, maybe three, depending on how you view Mitch White, right? But they got at least two of them in Bass and Pop. And then you look at the circumstances around Eovaldi, another guy who didn't move with the Red Sox. The Guardians guys didn't move, right? Like, I keep thinking of more. And then you think about the, you know, the circumstances around some of the other people who were available. Like, I think the Blue Jays felt they made a good offer for David Robertson. I think the Cubs just ultimately preferred the prospect that the Phillies offered up. You know, with Montas and Trevino, like, the Blue Jays felt like they were right there. And Oakland just preferred the prospects the Yankees were giving up. I think with Lopez, you're mentioning with the Orioles, I think the price was very different to move Lopez in the AL East than it was going to be to move him to the AL Central and to Minnesota. So I think it really was this weird confluence of circumstances that sort of boxed the Blue Jays out of that market and prevented them from adding that like one more high leverage reliever that we've been saying they really needed to add.
Yeah. And, you know, certainly worth noting, it's a good point about the controllable relievers. Clearly, you know, prices were high around baseball, very expensive as far as prospects to add those guys, which is reflected in the fact that they ultimately stayed put for the most part. Now, I think it's interesting context, and there's nothing to really disagree with there or object to. It's just ultimately, you know, the GM jobs and these front office jobs are coveted, and there's a lot of pressure on them, and they demand a lot of creativity. And ultimately, those are the obstacles. And so how do you find a way around those obstacles and make sure that the bullpen is good enough? And can you find a way around those obstacles and make sure that the bullpen is good enough? And so to some extent, the Jays did. Bass helps, Pop helps, you know, Mitch White helps. So it's not that they didn't improve. It's did they get that full improvement that they could have used and obviously were seeking? Did they find that creative pathway to get that done? At this point, it looks like they got partially there, which is better than nothing, but maybe not as far as they could have.
It's tricky, right? Because when the creative pathway for a Jorge Lopez is like one of your top prospects, like, I don't know if I want to do that for a reliever who's good for the first year in his career. It's like we were talking about earlier in the podcast, like, what was Jorge Lopez's value just last year? What's his value been for the entirety of his career? Extremely low, right? And he figured it out this year. Great. But there isn't like a great track record of success there with him. So are you really going to be giving up like a premium name from your system for you know, to convince the Orioles to trade Jorge Lopez in the division? Like, think of like with, so you talk about the barriers, like think about with Detroit, right? Like Joe Jimenez, who we talked about tons leading into the deadline, very high on that list for the Blue Jays. Gregory Soto as well, very high on their preferred list of relievers that they were targeting at the deadline that they had discussions about. But if Detroit is saying, look, we're underperforming this year. We don't feel like we're as good as we were meant to be. We obviously went out and splashed and spent a ton of money, and we want to continue spending money going forward. We are trying to turn the corner here. We want to be good in 2023. If we are trading you a Jimenez or a Soto who could contribute to us in 2023, it has to be also for someone who can help us in 2023. Somebody who is proven, somebody who is MLB Now talent, like current big leaguer. If that is the ask for the Detroit Tigers and you're the Toronto Blue Jays, are you then looking to somebody on your actual MLB roster? And it's not going to be somebody on your bench, right? It's not going to be a Bradley Zimmer. Like, it's going to be somebody who you are starting, somebody from your regular rotation of position players. Are you making that deal for a controllable reliever if that's the cost? And are you sort of jeopardizing the continuity in your clubhouse? And are you taking something away from your offense in order to add a Jimenez? That's, to me, like, that's tough to find the creative way around that barrier.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. It would be a challenge. It would maybe mean paying more, or you go back to the Cubs at that point, you offer a bit more than for David Robertson than you thought you should have to, quote unquote. You know, there are different ways to kind of look at these things. We just know the end result at this point. We know the end result is the bullpen looking the way it does. Bullpen with no lefties right now, a bullpen that, you know, and look, like, the Jays still have a good farm system, so that's good. But the price of that, and once you start talking yourself out of relievers, you don't end up necessarily with a ton of relievers that you feel a full degree of confidence in. That's the other side of it, is if you're like, I don't know about Joe Jimenez, he was walking everyone last year. All right, well, then the Tigers are the ones with Joe Jimenez and not you. And, you know, you have to figure it out with Trevor Richards and Jimmy Garcia hanging changeups to Rougned Odor, and that's okay. That's going to happen. I'm not trying to knock Jimmy Garcia here, but you know, that's the trade-off at the deadline.
Sure is. Let's step away. When we come back, we should talk pitching. We should talk starting rotation, because there's some big questions there, and we should talk you know, probably about the players on the Blue Jays who are actually going to play, other than the whoever's going to end up in the 13th position on the position player roster. All of that and so much more when we continue on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith, our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade, and it is time now for Major League Beer for Major League Baseball, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Old Benny Baltimore's at Camden Yards this week and got to see the Felix Bautista entrance up close. That's, from what I understand, like a relatively new development for them there in Baltimore. Looked awesome on TV, probably looked really cool in person. Starting to see that a lot of ballparks around MLB right now. Everyone's seen the Edwin Diaz entrance. Jordan Romano's got an entrance. Ben, are you in favor or are you opposed to this trend of closer entrances across MLB?
I can't imagine being opposed to a trend that's so fun. It's awesome, I think. And Edwin Diaz, clearly, I think it's the best entrance any closer has ever had. I know Mariano Rivera, I know Trevor Hoffman. I mean, those are legendary in their own right. But Edwin Diaz, it's better. It's on a different level. It's incredible. It takes over the stadium. Mr. and Mrs. Met playing the trumpets. And the Felix Bautista one was incredible. I thought it was great. I think Romano's is pretty good too. But yeah, very much pro closer entrance music. I hope that we continue to see them. You know, you have to have a certain stature. You're not going to do it for a closer by committee, per se. But I think that if you get to a certain stature, you've earned it. Let's see that happen.
Yeah, they're almost better when they're, like, understated. You know what I mean? Like, Edwin Diaz's is pretty, like, it's not like, smashing you over the head with, like, death metal, right? Like, it's very, you know, same with the Bautista one. Like, pretty understated, you know? Like, those ones are almost better than the ones that, you know, come in with something like really hard hitting and just, you know, like really just kind of, you know, rattling for lack of a better word. So I like those ones. Trevor McGill had one that I saw in Minneapolis when I was there at Target Field. It's kind of cool. He comes out to the GoldenEye theme. Like, I am open for expanding it to the McGills of this world, to like the eighth inning guys and the seventh inning guys. Like, why not, man? Remember when Jason Grilley had an entrance when he was pitching like the seventh and eighth inning for the Blue Jays? Like, it's awesome. Yeah, he did. You don't remember that? He had an entrance and they were throwing fire like up on the Jumbotron and everything. And he had a song and all that. And that was a big thing during that season that Grilley was good with the Blue Jays. So why not, man? let's do it. Let's build it out. I would imagine that the relievers themselves enjoy it too. Like they must derive a certain amount of energy from it. They must like get a bit of adrenaline going from it. I couldn't imagine being Edwin Diaz with some of the entrances that he's having. It's only going to escalate as he gets into later September and, you know, even into October in the postseason and his entrance music hits and you've got the stadium going nuts and it's packed out and everybody's like edge of their seat, playoff baseball. I can't imagine the just the adrenaline and the energy that he would feed off of that.
Yeah, it's really cool. I think to me, you know, I think it's got to be closers only though. Like I don't want to see fifth, sixth inning guys.
Why? Who cares?
Yeah.
I think
it takes away from how exciting it is for the closer. Like if it is a bit more of a okay, this is an event. As opposed to, you know, if your fifth inning reliever, your low leverage mop up guy is getting a big entrance music, it might take away from it a little bit.
No, I'm talking about like the seventh, eighth inning, you know, lock it down guys. At this time of year, like it's only the teams left like that, right? Like if you're the Braves have like three dudes on in their bullpen who could be closers on other teams, right? So just because they aren't in a position to be a closer on that team doesn't mean they shouldn't have an entrance, right? And like all the better if it's unique and it's like particular to them. I don't think we need, you know, three dudes coming out to Cannibal Corpse. Like I think that if like you've got, you know, people who like have something that hints at the place that they're from, like wasn't Bautista doing the Wire theme, yeah, right? And if you've got something that connects to the city and connects to the fan base, I don't see why you would exclude like the shutdown eighth inning guy from having his own entrance.
If you've got a really dominant reliever, then sure, we can expand it, I think, to seventh, eighth. Yeah, I think that's fair. As long as it's not your, you know, soft tossing, you know, waiver claim that's getting a big entrance.
What's the strikeout percentage cutoff for you or the XERA cutoff for you to let a guy have an entrance? Because I think you got to set that for me.
I think 25%, you got to have a 25% strikeout percentage or don't even try with a closer entrance. That's pretty good.
So we're recording this at an awkward time because Jose Berríos is going to, almost said Jose Bautista. That would be funny if Jose Bautista was pitching tonight, but no, Jose Berríos is pitching tonight and we don't know what happened yet as we're recording this, and we're about to find out in not that many hours from now. And when you're listening to this, you probably do know what happened. All we know sitting here right now is, wow, do the Blue Jays need a big outing from Jose Berríos here on Wednesday, August the 10th. They've dropped the first two games of the series against the Baltimore Orioles. It's the final day of a road trip. Everybody's tired. It's the dog days of August. As Ben said, it was 2 million degrees on Tuesday night. Bullpen is thin. The Blue Jays have been having short starts recently. I mean, you know, Kikuchi had a stinker, and I mean, Manoah didn't even get like super deep in his start. Didn't look amazing in his outing. Berríos had a short outing his last time out. You know, Mitch White didn't go very deep in his outing. I mean, the Blue Jays could really use some innings from Jose Berríos, but I mean, who knows what you're going to get if you're the Blue Jays Jose Berríos right now, because it looked like he had figured it out in July, and then he has started August by just regressing to that inconsistency that we saw through the first half of the season. So, Ben, I feel like your guess is as good as mine as to which Jose Berríos is actually going to take the mound at Camden Yards.
Exactly, and I think that in itself is telling, right, that it is a guessing game, that you don't know exactly what to expect from a pitcher, again, who's, you know, not only this year, but six more years, $20 million, right? Like that's a really big commitment for this team. Safe to say, if he hit free agency after this winter, he would not get $120 million six-year deal. So that's done. You know, you're not going to undo that. That is what it is. And he's still a pitcher with a lot of skills and athleticism and traits that make him appealing and intriguing, even for this season, let alone the future. So the Jays need to find a way to get more consistency out of him. Certainly, he's flashed upside this year with a couple of 13 strikeout performances. So you know it's there. The velocity's there. But I don't know. I mean, to me, it's an oversimplification to say that he needs better fastball command, because what pitcher doesn't? But I do think that's part of it. I fail to see other ways to explain this, really. I mean, I don't know if you have them, but I think it's stating the obvious to say that he hasn't really been consistent, that he's had a disappointing season, that they need more from him, that his performance needs to improve as the Blue Jays go down the stretch, and that's a huge variable for them. But I don't know reasons as to why it's gone this way so far.
No, his misses just have been over the heart of the plate, and those are getting hammered, right? Like, big league pitchers are going to, you know, punish you if you leave too many fastballs right over the heart of the plate, right? Like, if he's going to miss, he's going to need to miss off the plate. And like, that's the biggest thing for me. It's, and with him, you almost work backwards, right? For a lot of guys, you kind of look to their fastball first. I almost look to his curveball first. I looked at the reactions he's getting from hitters with his curveball, because when you see him getting flinches with his curveball and getting chase outside the zone and also missing bats in the zone with his curveball, again, not over the heart of the plate, but to the edges and down, that's when you know Jose Berríos is on, and that's when you know he's going to be pretty good. But when you don't see that from his curveball, then the fastball seems to be pretty hittable, and hitters seem to be okay eliminating that breaking pitch for him and teeing off on fastballs. So yeah, it's execution, really. And yeah, I'm not a pitching coach. I don't know if it's mechanical. I know the Blue Jays have been doing a lot, you know, a lot of tinkering with him and making a lot of tweaks, moving him on the rubber and looking at his release points and changing things, but yeah, it's, you know, it had to be tough to see him regress in that early August outing. And, you know, the Blue Jays obviously hope he turns it around, because, like, these are the biggest leverage points, right, for the Blue Jays is, can Jose Berríos be Jose Berríos again? Can he be consistent? Can Vladimir Guerrero Jr. be something closer to 2021 Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? He's still having a very good year, but it certainly, you know, is not risen to the standard that he set for himself in 2021. And can Bo Bichette be the guy that we saw earlier in his career? Like, can he strike out at the lower rate that he was earlier in his career? Can he get on base at the higher rate that he was earlier in his career? It's funny to say earlier in their career about, you know, guys who are like 23 and 24, but these guys broke in so early and set their standards so high. I mean, those are the biggest swing points for me for the Blue Jays, honestly. Like, Berríos, Vlad, Bo, and George Springer health. Those would be the four biggest things. We can sit here and, like, we can hammer on, like, the pluses and minuses of Bradley Zimmer versus Jackie Bradley Jr. And we could talk about, like, give Jake McGee a shot and they don't have a lefty in their bullpen. They got to upgrade on Trent Thornton. All that stuff is pretty marginal in comparison to Bo, Vlad, Springer, Berríos. Like, I think those are kind of the four things that need to go right for the Blue Jays over the next 6 to 8 weeks for them to be successful.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, right? And the leverage points now are internal. You're not really looking outside the organization. So it's internal. So what can these guys do? And look, I mean, based on what those guys have done, not in like the distant past, but in the quite recent past, that's not a bad group to have to bet on, right? You know, Vladdy, certainly, and even recently, he's on a 20-game hit streak, which is certainly a reflection of better offensive performance from him, better approach.
And Vladdy cranks it. Straight away, center field, gone! His second in as many nights, and it's a one-run game.
I don't know about you, Dan, but I feel like I'm at the Rogers Center right now. Fans are on their feet. They're going crazy.
John Schneider saying that he likes the approach from both Bo and Vlad, being more selective at the pitches that they're swinging at. And so even if it doesn't necessarily lead to walks, there's more selectivity going on. And we're seeing some really good swings. Bo, the two opposite field home runs, season WRC plus now at 105. So an above average player offensively, not way above average, not on pace to hit 29 home runs the way he did last year, but still okay to good offensive season with room for more. But like you say, I mean, if Bo goes off, if Vlad goes off, that will carry them in the regular season. If Berríos can find his form, all of a sudden you have your game three playoff starter and a lot of confidence in him. And Springer, I mean, it's a huge variable. We don't know exactly what to expect, but all of those guys have the potential to be huge, huge game changers for this team.
Yeah, I mean, because I just don't think that, like, fixing up Yusei Kikuchi is going to make that big of a difference for this club. Like, I just think a lot of the other stuff is just kind of around the edges of the roster. And, like, look, what's done is done, right? Like, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. probably is not going to reach the, I don't know, 160 weighted runs created plus he had last year, whatever it was. Bo Bichette's not going to get up to the 125, 130 that he had last year. But they do just have to be good for these next 6 weeks. Same thing with Jose Berríos. He's not going to have his career numbers this year. Like, he's not going to be Mr. Consistency this year because of everything that has happened prior. But you got to watch that. Like, that's over. That's all. It's on the books, man. That's on the Baseball Reference page. That is there. That is set in stone. It's what happens going forward. It's like, you have to find a way to be productive going forward. Because, like, what do we always say? Like, just get to the postseason and be healthy and hot at that time. and you'll be fine. And I really do believe, like, if this team gets into the postseason, which I still very much believe it will, I think it's going to be dicey between like first and second, and, you know, for which wild card position they get. And there's obviously quite a bit of leverage riding on getting that first wild card position because of the travel and because of the circumstance of the people who maybe can't come to Canada and because of where you might end up going and hosting all three games of the wild card. But like, this team's going to get into the postseason, I believe. So be playing well when you do. Because if you're healthy and you're playing well, then friggin' anything can happen in a 3-game, in a 5-game, in a 7-game series. It's just not that much baseball. Like, I don't think you can sit here right now and look at the Blue Jays and be, that's not a World Series team. You don't know. You don't know what's going to happen in the postseason. I watched the Washington Nationals win a World Series. I just watched the Atlanta Braves win a World Series last year. Like, regular season performance does not matter once you're in the tournament. Get in the tournament, be playing well, be healthy, and you're good. And you can do some pretty special things. So it really is about, like, just forgetting what has happened in the past for the Blue Jays and going forward and, like, finding a groove late and getting hot and clicking and firing all cylinders, all those cliches at the right time. I think that's how this team could be successful.
Yeah, they absolutely have that upside still. It's still there. And no number of losses against, well, maybe if they lose 15 against the Orioles, that might undermine it. But, you know, you lose 2 to the Orioles, it doesn't change it. They still have the upside to be as good as any team in Major League Baseball. They have the chance to go and scare the Yankees and beat the Yankees and the Astros, any team, really, in the National League as well. I mean, there's some really good teams in the National League, Mets, Atlanta, Dodgers, Padres, obviously. So you got some scary teams there. But the Jays could play with anyone. And so this is where the Springer IL decision just made so much sense to me, because it doesn't necessarily, like, yeah, it hurts. And maybe if he's playing these last couple games, they're 1-1. Or maybe they're even 2-0 if Springer's playing and he's... But the thing is, he wasn't fully healthy anyway. So they probably wouldn't have gone 2-0 against the Orioles because he wasn't even healthy anyway. So get him healthy, let him rest, and get him back when he's ready to contribute. And you got to see how this shot works, this anti-inflammatory shot works, because if it does work once, then you establish a time frame for whether you have to do it again. Because if it takes 2 weeks, you want to be well aware mm-hmm. of that. You don't want to give him a shot in that case on September 23rd or September 28th because you're getting too close. But maybe you try to time it if he does need another one, because, I mean, I don't know. And this is, you know, the Jays aren't sharing us the intimate details of exactly what's going on with his elbow, which is fine, but it doesn't seem necessarily, we can say this, that it certainly lingered to this point, so maybe it will continue to linger.
Yeah, I would expect so. I don't think that's going to be resolved until the offseason, until there isn't, like, baseball to be played and George Springer can have it properly addressed. And, like, that's a good point that, yeah, if he has to receive another shot, you want to know, okay, how long does it take to kind of recover from it? Because, like, these, like, anti-inflammatory injections, these cortisone shots, man, talk to ball players about them. Like, there are some scary shots. This is not like a COVID-19 vaccination. This is like this is a needle, man. And this thing is going in deep. And it is like, it is a very invasive thing. And it takes some time to get over these shots. But they're effective, man. They numb the pain. Like, I remember Nate Pearson got an injection probably late August last year, maybe even mid August, and felt great towards the end of the season. Like, said, like, he felt fine, was able to, you know, would have been able to pitch into the postseason, was, like, excited about pitching in the postseason, felt like himself on the mound. Obviously the Blue Jays didn't get there, and then they were like, all right, let's go take care of the sports hernia now. But because of the injection he got, like, he got to the finish line feeling really good. So maybe one shot's enough to get George Springer there. Maybe they have to do it again and they learn something this time around, just about kind of best practices. But yeah, get George Springer peaking at the right time of the year, and that could be a powerful thing in your lineup. That can be really influential to wins and losses. Last thing, you say Kikuchi. What else is there to say? Does the conversation change? Does the decision-making change now with regards to how you handle Yusei Kikuchi for the next 6, 7, 8 weeks, however many weeks are left in the postseason? If he goes out his next time again, and John Schneider says he's going to get his next start, but if he goes out his next time again and it's another 3 walks in the first inning, 5 runs on the board by the third, like, if it's another situation like that, is it a different conversation and different decision-making than it was last time the Blue Jays had this conversation, had to make this decision in, like, June, July, whenever that was, when they had to find a next strain for him to kind of try to sort some things out?
Yeah, I could be. I think it has the potential to be different. It would require a couple things, though. I mean, one variable there is Mitch White, how he pitches, how he looks. and his health, of course, which we can't take for granted. The other one is Ross Stripling. As he comes back from his injury, how does he do? How much time does he need? But at this point, until Stripling's fully healthy, you just need Yusei Kikuchi. So unless Stripling comes back and he's all systems go, and you're feeling really good about Mitch White, you want him in the rotation, maybe at that point you shift some things around with Kikuchi. Certainly, you have the flexibility to do that if you think that's best for the team. But, you know, I just, at this point, they need him. If you're looking at healthy starters in the organization, he's one of the best five. So, you know, that's not a resounding endorsement of the starting pitching situation right now, but he is, right? I think he's one of the best five. So you kind of need to keep rolling him out until someone else is healthy.
There's damning with faint praise, and then there's whatever it is that you just said.
Right?
Yeah. No, and Thomas Hatch, honestly, I don't even think is starting anymore. Like, I think his role has been changed. I think they're looking at him out of the bullpen now. So they, I don't even think that's an option anymore. I think, honestly, like, next man up would be Casey Lawrence, I would think, at this point, unless you think I'm missing somebody.
No, I see Casey Lawrence as a viable option there, yeah. And Kikuchi, he's better.
Right. After Kikuchi, I would say even bullpen day that Casey Lawrence is a part of might actually be what's more realistic. It's like opener Casey Lawrence for a few innings, Trent Thornton for two innings, and try to get it to the finish line. Like, that's what you're looking at. So yeah, here's the thing. Like, I think that Kikuchi to the bullpen is more on the table now than it was earlier this season. This is why I asked that. Like, I think earlier this season it was like, nope, we got to get him going as a starter. Like, he's got to be in our rotation. I do think that, like, the door is opening to, all right, maybe we move him to the bullpen for the rest of the year. And maybe we just try to get some use out of him there. And, like, obviously he's not going to be a guy you're bringing into leverage, but maybe it's a, you know, if you get a short start from a Mitch White, or maybe it's a, you know, somebody takes a comebacker or something like that, we bring in Yusei Kikuchi to try to cover some innings. Like, I do think that the Kikuchi to bullpen thing is more on the table now than it was. Obviously the preferred scenario for all involved is that Kikuchi's starting and being effective and pitching out of the rotation, but that's not what we saw last time out. We'll see what we see next time out, but yeah, I do think there are some different options on the table now than the last time the Blue Jays are going through this, Ben.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I think that as the season gets closer to the finish line, you have to shift things around, and it's you know, with Kikuchi, of course, it's alternatives, it's who else do you have in that mix, but you know, as the Jays move on here and get closer, there will be a chance to kind of move on from players who aren't helping you, whether that's shifting their roles, taking them off the roster entirely. That's obviously not a question with Kikuchi. He's here to stay. But others will just lose their roster spot. The Jays will move on because you have to make that push, and you have to accept and understand that there will be some people pushed aside as the Jays try to get that top wildcard seed here down the stretch.
Absolutely. That's going to be it for us. He's Ben Nicholson Smith. Follow him on Twitter at @BNicholsonSmith. Our producers are Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. They do fine work, and we thank them as always. My name's Arden Zwelling, and we're going to talk to you next week. Blue Jays getting into sort of the stretch run. I guess it's like the longest stretch run in sports, MLB. 2-month stretch run to the finish line. Still a lot of games to be played, a lot of things that can happen, and a lot of swings that can come in terms of momentum and emotions and the way teams look. And hey, we've seen crazy stuff happen in September, but we'll be there with you throughout it. Well, thank you for listening. Talk to you next time on At the Letters.